Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm the other guy on The Other Podcast. Hi, folks. It's John Hogue sitting here running the console across the table from Stacy at our undisclosed location that we operate out of. However, in beautiful Valdosta, Georgia, we have Diana. How you doing, Diana?
I'm great. Hey, did you know that today was the mass caucus meeting of the Republican Party?
I did know it was the first day of spring, so maybe something good
happened. The what caucus?
The mass caucus. In other words, if you wish to be any kind of activist, delegate, alternate, any of the above, you show up at this meeting, you sit at your precinct table, you elect some poor soul who didn't duck quickly enough as your president or as your chairman, and you elect some other person who was giggling too much to pay attention as your vice chair, and then you select somebody who actually knows what they're doing as the secretary.
Okay. Well, how did that go today?
Very, very well. Anyway, we had one guy there, though, who was an extreme enthusiast for the Convention of States. I predict that by district meeting time, people will see him coming and dive under tables.
Okay, well, there's some good news out of Valdosta this week. Mm-hmm. An escaped prisoner wanted in Kentucky was captured in Valdosta.
Yay.
After a chase, about 10:56 p.m. Wednesday, officers were dispatched to the 1500 block of Lankford Drive. Mm-hmm. There was a dispute at an apartment complex. Police saw a car leaving the area that matched the description they had been given, driving at a high rate of speed with the passenger door open. The driver lost control and hit a pole at the intersection of Lankford Drive and West Gordon Street. That's in your neighborhood, isn't it?
It's a ways away.
Gordon Street rang a bell.
Yes.
Anyways, but Dasmond A. Walker, 29, is charged with obstruction of an officer, disorderly conduct, reckless driving, driving with a suspended license, improper left turn, and hit and run. He was also wanted on a felony escape warrant for Kentucky and charges from Houston County of possession of a firearm by a convicted felon and possession of methamphetamine. So a one-man crime wave has ended his career in Valdosta. Way to go, Valdosta, Georgia.
Well, that leads into actually not the first thing I wanted to bring up. The first thing I wanted to bring up was your post about the anniversary this year.
Oh, that's right.
The 365th day.
Yes, yes. This past week, we marked the 365-day anniversary of 15 days to slow the spread. That was Monday, folks. Well, actually, no, it wasn't Monday this week. Anyways,
it was Tuesday.
Yeah. Anyways, on Monday, March 20, I'm quoting Jim Garrity at National Review. Mm-hmm. who's a squish rhino, but it's okay.
He's a nice guy,
though. He's a nice guy. I enjoy, despite being a squish rhino.
Well, I mean, you know, he's one of the people I enjoy having.
He is pretty good.
At CPAC.
Okay. Well, on Monday, March 16th, 2020, the White House advised all Americans to avoid gathering in groups of more than 10, urged old people to stay at home, and a new set of guidelines designed to fight the coronavirus outbreak, labeling the effort 15 days to slow the spread.
Yeah, well, I at that point had already been sent home from where I work at a government facility as a contractor for 15 days or approximately to slow the spread that happened the week before for me. So anyway, that's just one of those wonderful anniversaries that we have. But, you know, getting back to the reckless driver who was wanted for his methamphetamine.
Ah.
Yeah, at least he wasn't, you know, involved.
The wrong kind of dope.
Well, yes, he was, at least he wasn't involved in something truly dangerous like marijuana. But apparently it turns out that there's room for only one kind of dope at the White House. Mm-hmm. Some of the younger people who were on the incoming staff have been either fired or sent home to work remotely because they admitted on their security clearance forms that they used to use dope or have used dope. Now, I will tell you that when I got my first security clearance back in the 60s, admitting to using dope actually wasn't a problem as long as you were being honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I'm of an age where my high school graduating class was probably the last class at my high school where the majority of the graduates had not smoked dope yet.
okay.
It was not true the next year. I didn't see any reason to be smoking anything. I didn't smoke tobacco, and so the dope didn't have a particular attraction for me either. So I could truthfully answer on the form I was filling out, you know, that I had never used any of those sorts of substances. But it turns out that even if you get rid of all the dopeies, it will not ensure that you won't have tripping.
Yeah. But you know, the thing is that both Biden and Harris during the campaign at different times had promised to decriminalize marijuana use.
By the way, apparently Harris still has her security clearance.
Yeah.
And one of a former president still has his.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. But speaking of tripping, Joe Biden can't even walk upstairs is the headline at one of my blog posts at theothermccain.com. On Friday, President Biden fell 3 times while walking up the stairs of Air Force One. And White House Communications Director Kate Bedingfield took to Twitter to say Biden is fine, adding the fall was nothing more than a misstep on the stairs.
Three times?
The wind blew him over.
Yeah. And by the way, I linked to a story at dailywire.com called Poll, Americans Worried About Biden's Ability to Do the Job.
Look,
they should be terrified.
If there were justice in the world, whoever in the Democratic Party hierarchy let him get that nomination should be going to jail for the rest of their lives for elder abuse.
Yes.
I mean, seriously.
I completely agree.
Nobody
cares about this man's welfare or dignity. He's a meat puppet, and it's
well. Speaking
disgusting.
Of anniversaries,
yes.
Well, but yeah. If you will recall, that a year ago, right? Okay, what happened was, so the dogs have decided to
join
us with the barking there in the background here at the undisclosed location.
Well, who knows? But, who knows? Might be lurking about it.
Well, anyways, but the point is that the Democratic Party establishment was panicking. Mm-hmm. Okay, when Bernie Sanders was leading, and it was none other than James Carville who went on MSNBC more than once to say we gotta rally around Biden, and then it was is it James Clyburn down there in South Carolina who delivered mm-hmm. the endorsement? Mm-hmm. And so with the help of black voters in South Carolina was where they really turned it around for Biden.
Yeah, and ended it for Mayor Pete.
Yeah, yeah. And that was the end of Buttigieg and down there in South Carolina. But
but they weren't being racist, just homophobic.
Right.
Can't win.
Well, yeah, the other kind of hate. Yeah, we're going to be talking about hate later on.
This whole thing about elder abuse, you know, I come from it from an ancient perspective, I guess. Mm. Now, I'm so old. I'm so old that someone the average age, which would be 53, of the Republican leadership in the House is young enough to be my son or daughter, whereas the average age of the Democrats' leadership in the House is the same as my little brother. 70. So, elder abuse is something, you know, that I'm probably hoping to avoid as part of my current life.
Well, you know, the thing about Joe Biden tripping on the stairs, my older brother, who's only 3 years older than me, had a very serious fall last June and broke
he's still gimping from it.
Broke his leg and messed up his ankle going down steps and what there was a puddle. It had been raining and there was a puddle at the bottom and he hit the bottom of the steps and it was just like shoom, his feet went out from under him. He was carrying his photographic equipment.
Whoa.
And so he had his hands full. So when he tripped, it just, you know, and he broke his leg and he's still recovering. By the way, the doctor this past week, we took him to his orthopedics appointment. So the doctor's given him a clean bill, but told him, said, you know, you're going to suffer for this for a while. And I believe John just a month ago sprained his ankle out in the driveway.
Yeah. And actually a little more than a month ago, but yeah, I tripped on the side of the driveway between the edging and the lawn.
When you're young, you know, when I was a kid playing football, you know, we would, you know, you'd be, you know, twisting your knee, your ankle, your shoulder, whatever. You'd get these injuries, and they just tell you to shake it off, you know, and when you're a kid, you can do that.
Well, I mean, it takes a little bit longer to heal when you're 73. There's a question here that somebody has put in the chat asking if microphones were invented when I was growing up. The answer to that.
All right, now.
Yeah, the answer to that is why, as a matter of fact, yes, we even had a telephone. As a matter of fact, I was born in 1947, and the microphone was invented in 1876. So they've been around for 71 years by the time I was born.
Oh, okay. So,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I was reading the remark. Daddy Glenn Roastmaster. Hon, it's still called dope. I've heard it called dope. And, you know, since the 80s, I've heard it. People use all sorts of silly things. God, it's weed, it's smoke, it's this, it's that. I mean,
it was usually actually when I was growing up in the 50s and early part of the 60s, before I got into high school, I would usually hear it referred to as weed. Mm-hmm. And that comes
weed from, man.
No, that comes yeah. from the that comes from the fact that hemp weed. Was growing in the ditches as weeds because it had been planted to make rope for the Navy in the Second mm-hmm. World War.
ditch weed, ditch yeah, they would right. talk.
But it became more commonly called dope through the 60s. But you know. We're talking about going back and looking at the way things used to be. And, you know, I'm an optimist in a lot of ways. I'm really looking forward to the Biden administration being Jimmy Carter's second term. And people say that's optimistic. Well, yeah, Buchanan's second term would be worse. But, you know, there was this wonderful demonstration of the administration's incompetence in Anchorage, of all places. Basically, you had an incompetent bully trying to bully a competent bully. And the Secretary of State, Blinken, and National Security Advisor, Sullivan, at the beginning of at a press conference at the start of this meeting with the Chinese delegation that was happening in Anchorage for some reason, I guess that's kind of halfway in some respects. They were surprised, you know, when they on purpose insulted the Chinese in an open press briefing, that the Chinese responded in kind and more vigorously and more effectively. Insulting them. Mm-hmm. I've made a point in my blog about dealing with cyberbullying and that sort of stuff. And I've always said that the way you deal with a bully is you hit them back. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if the bully is going to overpower you anyway, and hitting them back isn't going to be effective, you need to hold your fire until you can be successful. Because otherwise, the bully is going to see his beating you down again as an affirmation of his superior position over you and his right that he sees to inflict his will upon you. And basically that's what went down in Alaska this week. There, Fred Flights had a post up that I quoted from saying the Alaska press event was a debacle that will build a perception that the U.S. is returning to Jimmy Carter-like incompetence in foreign policy. It also confirms claims by Biden critics that his foreign policy team is headed by inept second and third string Obama retreads. So America's enemies are watching and planning on how to cash in on President Biden's weak and incompetent foreign policy, to which I can just say, is it 2025 yet? No. You know, we're just going to have to outlive this, I'm afraid.
From your mouth to God's ear, because I personally am not real. I don't see a good outcome here.
Well, you know, to a certain extent, though, we are beginning to see some Republican politicians begin to grow a pair. You know, there was that Bill Hagerty kind of really yes. got with
yeah.
it.
By the way,
he's Bill, a new senator from Tennessee.
Yeah. Hang on a second. I wanted to tell you a little bit more about Bill Hagerty. I'm going to get to this in just a little bit. But okay, Bill Hagerty, senator from Tennessee, as I said, he was elected last year by the voters in Tennessee. He was elected to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and he's all out of bubble gum. The Biden administration is being urged to level with the nation's growing anxious about the historic surge of illegal immigrants across the U.S.-Mexico border. I'm reading from the Washington Examiner.
By the way, if you don't get the bubblegum thing, that does have to do with aliens.
Yes, right.
I love that movie until the very last few minutes.
Anyways, quote, it is time to level with the American people regarding the nature of this crisis, Tennessee Senator Bill Hagerty said in a letter delivered to President Biden. Quote, your administration has demonstrated a complete lack of transparency regarding this crisis, including failing to provide adequate information concerning the migrants who are entering communities throughout the United States as a result of your policy and repeatedly refusing to even acknowledge that a crisis exists. The point is that many of these immigrants have COVID-19, and the testing shows that some of the testing shows that as many as half of them may be infected with this, and so there. But at the same time that the Biden administration is insisting that we must lock down everything, you know, for Americans, they're just going to let, foreigners with a contagious disease just waltz across the border.
Well, then they're also talking then about, since they don't have room for them on the southern border, putting them on planes and moving them north.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy.
Nope. Send them to remain in Mexico. If they're actually requesting asylum, then they'll have no problem remaining in Mexico. It is okay. I consider it a failed state, but so far it does have a quote unquote functioning government, and it is quote unquote a safe haven. So they can apply for asylum here, but they should stay in Mexico. I don't see why Biden's handlers didn't say to themselves, rather than annoying the heck out of a lot of heavily armed people on the border, how about we just sort of maintain the old policy quietly while making lots of speeches about how bad the orange man was.
Well, but you want to know what really is racist?
What?
Canada has closed their border with the United States for all non-essential travel.
Yeah. Anyway.
Racist Canadians.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's the one thing is that I'm famously a Canada hater, because Canadians are the one nationality that we're free to hate. Okay. There any other people that you hate, it's racist. But hating Canadians Canadians is wrong, I don't want to be right.
Well, you could. Okay. You might get into trouble if you hate the Quebecois because they're non-Anglophone.
Yeah. Anyways, what Democrats in the media, but I repeat myself, are promoting a dual message. First, that there is no crisis at the border. And second, that even if there is a crisis, it's entirely Donald Trump's fault. So the president cannot be blamed for anything that's happening under his administration. Everything gets blamed on the orange man bad.
Well, there is a nice cartoon that I saw this afternoon on Twitter. It has a picture of some kids in a fenced off area, and the same picture again, and the same picture a third time. And the first one is labeled Obama's children detention facilities. And the third is, the second is Trump keeping children in cages. And the
The third is labeled Biden immigrant holding or something like that. I mean, you know, and it's just you change the you change what you call exactly the same thing mm-hmm. based on the needs of what the party's narrative is.
Yep. By the way, I said I wanted to tell you something about Bill Hagerty, mm-hmm. And he's a great guy.
Yep.
And he's a guy that you need to watch because he has hired Julia Hahn. Okay. Ooh. He has hired an advisor named Julia Hahn that it previously worked in the Trump White House. Julia Hahn is the Southern Poverty Law Center has a dossier on her. Okay. So therefore she must be good. Okay. I forget what I was looking at earlier today, but someone we met, I know I met her and I believe you may have met her, John, Katie McHugh. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember her. We used to follow her back when she was on Twitter, but, Katie McHugh apparently had gone off on the far fringes of extremism. And so when she quit, she dumped a bunch of emails that she had with she used to work at Breitbart, by the way. Mm-hmm. And Katie McHugh just dumped her apparently all her emails on there. And so the fact that Julia Hahn had exchanged emails with people who are thought criminals is apparently the basis for, saying that she's a hater. And I want to congratulate Bill Hagerty on having the courage to hire someone that is so hated by the left that they have their own SPLC file.
Well, yeah.
Look, folks, if you're not on the SPLC list yet, you're just not doing it right.
Well, now there is a difference between us and the SPLC. There's probably several differences between us and the SPLC. One significant difference is, one thing we have in common is the SPLC and Stacey and I have both all been sued for defamation. The difference between us is that we've won our cases.
Mine was dismissed with prejudice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You have been sued as well, haven't you, Diana?
I have.
How did you get sued?
She was sued by Smallfeld.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Oh my God, for a comment?
Actually, he couldn't actually come up with a comment that I had actually made.
Oh. But he was accusing you of being someone else?
No. Into the bargain, he tried to claim I was on Twitter, which made life even more fun, since I have never been on Twitter in my entire life.
And he sued her employer.
And he was really stupid. He sued my employer. Now, suing me, I could have just, gone the long, calm route. But he dared to touch my employer. And that made me very, 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 very angry. So I hired Mark Randazzo.
You what?
I hired
Mark Randazzo.
As her lawyer.
And who is that?
He's a human wrecking ball disguised as a free speech advocate.
Oh, okay.
And the very second that he made communications with Schmalfeld, he did the really quick dismissed with prejudice, which proves, by the way, that he'd never had a case.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's worth every penny.
Yes, but that's a difference between now. There is another thing we have in common, though, with the SPLC.
We like to make money.
We like to have people support our work, and so we ask for donations.
Yeah, but unlike the Southern Poverty Law Center, we are not a tax tax-exempt organization.
Oh, no, we're for
nor
profit.
Nor do any of us have offshore accounts.
Yeah. I have no accounts in the Cayman Islands. But anyways, what I do have...
I will confess to having, when I worked in Switzerland, having a Swiss bank account. But that was years ago.
You were in Switzerland. That's
good. But okay, so... What we do have, if you will go to theothermccain.com on your web browser, you will notice near the top of the page in the center column, a yellow button. The yellow button has the word donate on it. I don't have to parse that word for you.
It's a complete sentence.
Yeah, donate is a complete sentence as an imperative. And so if you will click the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute dollars and cents and yen and rubles and euros, whatever you got, folks, around the world, you can donate to PayPal to support the blog and the podcast. Meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hogue's site, hoguewash.com.
Which, by the way, is spelled H-O-G-E-W-A-S-H. Hoguewash.com has in its sidebar on the right an icon of a tip jar. Click on that. Be taken off to PayPal where you can support the blog that way through donation. Or if you would like to actually get a tangible physical object to remind yourself. I don't have tote. Well, actually, I may have tote bags, but just like your local PBS station, you can get junk branded in ways that remind you of the blog through the Hoguewash store. And you can also support both our blogs by clicking on various links you'll find to Amazon shopping. Both our blogs participate in the Amazon Associates Program along with lots of other blogs. And when you support a blogger that way, what happens is you make the purchase. The blogger gets a small commission. You pay the same price. And it's actually one of the nicer things that Amazon does to support bloggers. We appreciate it. But regardless of how you choose to support us, you need to remember the five most important words in the English language.
Hit the freaking tip jar.
Yes, please.
Now, we were talking about yellow buttons.
Yes, we were talking about racism as well, because we had the SPLC out for examination. So why don't you take that as a segue into a post you did this week?
Yes. folks, as you may know, I am a native of Atlanta. You don't meet many natives of Atlanta. Most people who tell you they're from Atlanta, they tell you I'm from Atlanta. Well, they're actually from Cleveland, and they live in Dunwoody, okay, or someplace up there in Forsyth County or whatever.
I was born in Vanderbilt Hospital on 21st Avenue South in Nashville.
Yes.
An actual native Nashvillian.
And I was born in Georgia Baptist Hospital down on Boulevard. They've now changed the name of it, but I was actually, some years ago, I was... working on a Sunday night at the Washington Times, and mm-hmm. It was an awards show. It was the Grammy Awards show, and the rap group Outkast and they're from Atlanta, were one of the winners. And I looked them up, and I found that one of the members of Outkast and I were born at the same hospital. So, you know, yeah. Hey, man, I tell you what, all the greats born at Georgia Baptist down there on Boulevard. But anyways, meanwhile, back at the ranch, there was some bad news from Atlanta this week. As you know, there was a rampage. A shooting rampage by Cherokee County. And I had blogged about that earlier in saying that The shooter, by the way, his name is Robert Aaron Long, and he was 21 years old. Okay, and he was from Woodstock, Georgia, up there in Cherokee County. And I'm old enough to remember when that was rural. Cherokee County was as rural as, you know, as could be.
It didn't even have very many wide spots in the road.
Yeah. Is that if I'm going to have to say, Woodstock, Georgia. I'm Googling here, by the way.
People are wondering how come a boy from Nashville knows the geography of Georgia somewhat. And the answer is I used to be stationed in the state.
Yeah. The most famous thing in Woodstock, Georgia, once upon a time, was Dixie Speedway, a quarter mile, a 3/8 mile dirt
drag
track.
Strip.
A dirt track.
Really?
Yeah, Dixie Speedway.
A 3/8 mile oval.
Hmm. Yeah. A 3/8 mile oval was the biggest attraction in Woodstock, Georgia, once upon a time. Now, by the time I had graduated college, Cobb County had sort of sprawled across the border into southern Cherokee County. But anyways, but the idea that there were Asian massage parlors in Woodstock, Georgia, it when I saw this thing, it made my head explode. It's like, what are you, Woodstock? Are you kidding me? But they didn't even used to sell alcohol in Cherokee County. It was a dry county once upon a time. And you live long enough and you'll see everything. I've got a blog post called Atlanta, the Yellow Fever Theory. Okay. Now this young man, Robert Aaron Long, was raised in a very apparently a repressive Southern a Free Will Baptist Church, I believe it was. But anyways, his father was a youth pastor, and he had a lot of guilt over his sexual things. And apparently, what he was doing was he was going to these massage parlors to find a happy ending. Yeah, he was trying to get a happy ending, as they say. But anyways, so I happen to see while I'm writing about all this a headline: Asian women have always been a deadly obsession of white men. Now, degustibus non est disputandum.
You got it.
It's Latin for taste. Matters of taste are not subject to debate.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So if anyone has a sort of a kink, a fetish, whatever you want to call it, for the exotic Orient. Okay.
Look, different people find different things attractive.
Right. True. Obviously.
True.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I'm not one to argue, but I was always, as I say in my blog post at The Other McCain, because promoting the blog is the whole point here. But anyways, I've always been just a regular vanilla kind of guy. Okay. And so what angered me is the way that this is phrased, in that there is a lack of qualifiers in this mm-hmm. rhetoric. This idea that white men everywhere have universally been guilty of this deadly obsession, right? Why? Because one guy in Atlanta, loses his mind, I don't, he goes nuts and kills a bunch of people. Well,
and most of the victims are Asian women.
Six were
Asian women, two were white people, and one was Hispanic.
Right.
There were a lot of other injured people and a lot of devastated families.
Yes.
So,
this guy needs to be.
I would not mind if he received the lethal injection.
Yes, depending on how the psych workup things, he either spends the rest of his life in state custody in a mental hospital, or he gets a needle in the arm.
Yeah. Well, anyways, the shooter told his what happened is he had been in a halfway house, seeking treatment for his sexual obsession. I mean, he apparently had a serious problem. But then he told his roommate in the halfway house that the reason he went to these massage parlors was not because of the employees' race, but because he thought these massage parlors were safer than paying for sex elsewhere. Okay, and that's a quote from the New York Times, of all people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, the FBI has come out and said there's nothing racially motivated about this crime.
This guy had a sex obsession.
But the problem is not that this guy is a racist. The problem is that this is a big news story that doesn't fit the narrative.
Yeah. Well,
Stacy, you linked on Facebook to Andrew Sullivan. And Sullivan's point is that critical race theory, you plug in victim race and perpetrator race, and that gives you your answer no matter what else is involved.
Right. You know, and this is one of those things that Ed Driscoll would headline as we have descended into the bizarre hell world where Andrew Sullivan is the voice of common sense.
But see, here's the thing. The facts of the story just won't support the narrative. So this is going to disappear right down the memory hole at Minitrue.
There were 16 articles on the Washington Post, and I believe a solid 8 critical race theory based articles in the New York Times. There was one fact based article in the New York Times and one fact based article in the WAPO. So the narrative has been reinforced far more than the facts. We're always going to be hearing from the left, from our friends who believe everything they read from the WAPO and the Times. We're going to be hearing this for the next several years, how horribly white, how there's this sick white male obsession with Asian women. We're going to hear this no matter, and it's going to get really ugly.
And the thing is, by the way, let me ask you, Diana, are there any Asian massage parlors that you know of in Valdosta?
Okay. Treating things as somebody who gets massages.
Uh-oh.
There are, that I am aware of, four. There are four actual respectable places that a person goes for an actual massage. There may be some others that I am not aware of that are less than respectable.
So far as you know, there are none of these in the Valdosta area, because apparently they're everywhere now.
Well,
if they can be a Cherokee County.
Yeah, but I mean, here's the thing. Diana is correct that we're going to hear more and more about this invented racism, because it fits, and we're going to see more and more attempts like the 8 critical race theory articles here and some more over there. The same way that we saw the reinforcement of all that Trump derangement syndrome stuff over the last 5 years. Glenn Greenwald had a post mm-hmm. up on his Substack account about how yes. the big media outlets often independently confirm, and that's in scare quotes, each other's falsehoods.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, it all just goes down to the fact that when I first got involved in journalism 50 years ago, you had people who were what I'll call journalists who were message journalists, but they even those guys still operated within the idea of we have this set of facts and we'll operate around that. You know, maybe I'll tell this this story to make Bull Connor look like somebody who is a bad public official, mm-hmm. but I'll use the facts. I won't make stuff up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have a kind of laziness going on, and we have a kind of Marxist point of view that is not based on truth, but on power. And that has infected journalism. So, you know, you have these people who are play acting at what mm-hmm. we used to be journalists, mm-hmm. and they'll keep working as propagandists for the party until it, and they'll keep having their careers that way until it becomes too costly for them. And you're already seeing it begin to happen, because the real world catches up with you eventually. And you have things like folks at HuffPo being laid off.
Well, Daniel, I guess it was Greenfield over at Front Page Magazine was commenting that we have what amounts to a press that is incapable of reporting facts. The only thing they can report is social justice warrior narrative.
Well, there's no news. There's no news in Pravda, and no truth in Izvestia. And that's correct. The way things are going to be. And it's the way things were until there was no longer economic support for those two publications. And that the same thing's going to happen. And you're beginning to see the cracks in the foundation, though, mm-hmm. that supports this from a business as a business model. And eventually, they're going to run out of other people's money and mm-hmm. fail. But, you know, that's the first thing that is a good sign. The second thing that is happening that's driving their readership away is, after years of being in the attack mode, mm-hmm. the narrative now says they have to be in the support mode, right? They've got to mm-hmm. sell a new narrative. But they got a problem. After years of, say, ranting about kids in cages, it's kind of hard to put a positive spin on what's going on the border mm-hmm. with minor children being put in cages, right?
Mm-hmm.
Masks are going to be required even after you're vaccinated. There's not going to be a 4th of July. We're going to start bombing in the Middle East again.
Uh-huh.
You know, none of that's going to be an easy sell with the American public. So reality keeps interfering with the narrative, and the public's beginning to, well, I put it this way. The public is beginning to suspect that the warm fluid on our legs isn't rain.
That's absolutely true.
So, you know, you're going to see alternatives to main, well, you're already seeing like One America News and other mm-hmm. alternatives beginning to crop up. And you're beginning to see signs of panic in the mainstream media with their calls for censorship. Imagine the New York Times coming out in favor of censorship. Think that one through. It's happening, though. And so, you know, given the level the party has achieved over the House and the Senate and the White House mm-hmm. and corporate media, the next few years are going to be kind of stressful for the First Amendment as they try to hold on to what they've got. Mm-hmm. But I don't see them winning in the long run. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a rough 2 years getting to the midterm election, and it's not going to be a whole lot easier trying to get to 2025.
Well, we don't know the future.
No.
Okay. One of the things is that we know what happened yesterday. We know what happened today. We don't know what will happen tomorrow. And so, one of the things I was doing leading up to the election is people were going nuts. They were looking at polls and stuff like that. And I was like, man, just shut up and vote Trump. Just stop all this rambling all the time on Twitter. People just, feel like they have to share everything. Trying to hold on to my sanity.
Well, discretion and privacy are, kind of melted over the last few years. It's just astounding.
Yeah, that's where all this cancel culture is coming from. I spoke earlier about, the fact that Senator Hagerty has, mm-hmm. Has hired someone who was hate listed by the SPLC. And that's a very good sign that there are some people who are just not going to be bullied by all this.
Right. But I mean, that's you have to stand up.
And if people will stand up, these cowards will go back to the shadows where they belong.
Right. And the thing.
Yeah, but first they'll send the NYPD to stand on your doorstep. They're going to get the knock on the door in the middle of the night. So far, they're not dragging us out to the Black Marias.
We haven't gotten there yet.
Well, look, right now we're dealing with an equivalent of mini true.
Yeah.
But what she's talking about is they're really thinking about how do we implement mini love.
Well, anyway,
where I glimpse the top of a sky blue hat.
Yeah, but
she's quoting Orwell, by the way.
No, yes. I'm not. I'm actually quoting Anna Akhmatova, who is a brilliant poet, and everybody should read her.
Oh, okay.
But the other thing that they're trying to do is they're trying to create a mini PACs. Mm. And the thing is that because of the same kind of laziness in selling the narrative that you've had with the journalists, you had the same sort of use of, well, we can't call them Islamist terrorists. That mm-hmm. will hurt people's feelings. We'll just say they're extremists. And now everything's extremist. Stacey had a post on there pointing to a piece.
The extremist boomerang.
Yeah.
Okay, so why? And this is right now at the top of my blog, theothermccain.com. Why has the media become so obsessed with "quote unquote" white nationalism as a domestic terrorist threat?
Because we're all extremists, every last one of us.
Yeah. Kyle Scheidler at The American Mind, which, mm-hmm. by the way, is run by the Claremont Institute. And I'm just going to diverge just a little bit. The American Mind is owned by the Claremont Institute. Mm-hmm. Now, the Claremont Institute, once upon a time, was very much associated with Leo Strauss. Mm. And if you know anything about Leo Strauss and everything, this was regarded as a neocon a sort of thing. But they have, during the Trump years, they have come out and been very good. And I just want to commend the folks at the Claremont Institute for adjusting to our times.
Well, what happened is essentially some of them grew up and turned into paleocons.
Well, it's very interesting, but the Claremont Institute, I just want to, but Kyle Scheidler has got an item over there, and let me give you the headline on it while I'm doing it. Is it Making Americans Your Enemies?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he makes the argument that what has happened is an indirect consequence of the refusal of national security officials in the post-911 environment to be specific in naming the nature of the threat we faced. Because they did not wish to define the threat as Islamic terrorism. Mm-hmm. Instead, the national security establishment defined the problem as, quote unquote, extremism. Mm-hmm. And that has led to a drift over the past, 20 years or so to create the idea that anyone could be radicalized. Right. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly depending on how you define extreme terrorist, mm-hmm. and how you define attack. OK, there were those who they began claiming it was especially I remember in 2018. Mm-hmm. That there was a lot of talk, the idea that white supremacists are a greater threat than Islamic terrorists.
Well, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, basically, look, you just got to remember that we've always been at war with East Asia.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to read one paragraph from this.
Sure, go ahead.
Kind of key. He writes, privilege, extremism, supremacism. It's all spun as the same, and all spun as an evil on par with Islamic terrorism that must be stamped out in the same ways by the same people. When it comes to their fellow Americans, for many of our supposed counterterrorism elite, the imperative to separate the actions of a handful of extremists from the beliefs of large percentages of the populace has totally disappeared. While claiming to use lessons learned from Iraq and Afghanistan, in fact, what these counterinsurgents propose for their fellow citizens is the one thing they dared not countenance against foreigners.
Yeah.
Well, but don't worry. They're just going to send the cops to talk to you.
Yeah.
The problem is that eventually those conversations will be in room 101.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The New York PD is apparently going to be deployed to combat thought crimes.
But don't worry. You're going to get a hearing in front of a fair judge.
Mm-hmm. A tribunal.
And they have
5 minutes to consider your case before you're off to the gulag. 25 or death.
Either that, or maybe you'll wind up in front of a judge who's had the experience of being arrested himself. Stacey, you had a post about a judge in Milwaukee.
Woo-hoo! Yes. The headline is Milwaukee. Sarah Hoyt's shocked face could not be reached for comment. And I screen capped the tweet from Molly Hemingway of the Federalist, as you know. Molly Hemingway's tweet is breaking. Former president of Drag Queen Story Hour Foundation and children's court judge arrested on 7 counts of child porn. Oh, boy. Brett Bloom, a Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge and former president of the foundation that runs the city's Drag Queen Story Hour programs, been arrested. A 44-page search warrant was filed that he was using the name Dom Master BB. Uploaded 27 videos and images containing child pornography. 2 of the files were uploaded at a Milwaukee County government building. So apparently he was uploading it from the judge's chambers at the courthouse. He was elected last year to the court by running as a challenger to an incumbent Republican who had been appointed by Republican Governor Scott Walker. He said, quote unquote, "I'm the progressive alternative."
Yeah.
Oh, dear sweet Lord. I don't think they wanted. I think that is going to come back to haunt everyone. Go on.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing. No, your problem, folks, is that you just don't understand people like that. You're not sufficiently woke.
Oh, yes. I understand them just fine. They're perverts.
Well, okay, the New York police will be knocking on your door down there in Valdosta to have a talk with you. But
meanwhile, no, actually, she's right. The wokies ruin everything.
Yes, I had the headline earlier this week, "Wokies ruin everything." The U.S. military, for example, can't win wars, and its current strategic priorities are transgender troops, maternity flight suits, and attacking Tucker Carlson. Not necessarily in that order. Meanwhile,
the last time I was on active duty, I was at Fort Bragg. Jimmy Carter was president of the United States, and the military organization I was in, 10% of the members of that unit were pregnant. And that's one of the reasons why we needed the kinds of reforms that Ronald Reagan instituted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, this whole thing about going after Tucker Carlson. I'm so old that when I was serving in the Army, if I had made an official statement, anything remotely like the sort of stuff you saw some of those senior enlisted and officers make, I would have expected to have been relieved of my duties, and I would have been expected to have been charged and court-martialed under, at least under Article 134, which is conduct bringing disrepute to the service, or Article 1 and or Article 133, conduct on becoming an officer and a gentleman. There's been a tradition in the United States Army since it was the Continental Army that you stay out of civilian politics, period, the end. And that violation of custom is a clear violation of Article 134. There should be some court martials, and if I, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't give legal advice, but if I was one of those, if I was one of those senior service people who did that, I would want to talk to a JAG officer or a civilian officer with JAG experience about defending myself. If that's possible.
But they're not going to prosecute them in Biden's
arm. Nothing's going to happen.
That's right. On the other hand, given who has court-martial authority over those service men, there's no way that they're in any jeopardy. And that's scary.
Very.
It is.
We still have, what, 5,000 National Guard troops in D.C.? We have permanent fencing going up around the Atlanta, around the state capitol here in Georgia, which I want down right now.
Well, at least the fencing around the capitol is supposed to start coming down on Monday, according to the sergeant at arms.
And if we believe that, we are fools.
Well, we'll see.
Well, it better come down. That's all I can say. But in Georgia, they're actually putting iron fencing around the state house that needs absolutely to go.
Yeah. Well, you know, in Nashville, at the state capitol building, it's kind of on a hill by itself that's hard to get into with the limited access. It's fairly easy for the Capitol Police to control access to the state capitol. But Other weird things happen in Nashville, don't they, Stacey?
Yes. We had a couple of shootings this past week in Nashville that I've written about.
Well, one of them was someone who was stupid, maybe, but one of the people who got shot was just flat out crazy.
Yes. You know, folks, I sit around watching for my recreation to maintain my own sanity because politics will drive you crazy. I sit around watching police body cam videos, car chases, stuff like that. And de-escalation is the buzzword in law enforcement these days. Police are trained to reduce the risk of violence and confrontations by talking in a reassuring manner to the subjects of their investigations. There's also a lot of emphasis on less lethal weapons like tasers and beanbag guns as ways to avoid shooting suspects. In all of this, Nashville officer Ben Williams was doing a great job with Melissa Wooden. It was all fine up until she got shot. Now, if you watch the video, right, from the moment,
well, this is not an unarmed suspect.
Right. From the moment Officer Williams shows up, okay, he's doing a great job, folks. Now, what happened is Melissa Wooden was off her meds. She has a history of mental problems, and she was standing out in the front yard with a pickaxe and a baseball bat, just basically trying to commit suicide by cop, okay? And so the first thing that Officer Williams has to do is to get this woman away from the other officer's car, mm-hmm. okay? So he sort of advances a little bit, and she backs up. And so now he's got the space, and he's sitting there, and he says, "Nobody's going to shoot you." And he repeats this. "Nobody?" She said, "You're going to shoot me." He said, "Nobody's going to shoot you. Nobody's going to shoot you." And everything is going real good until Grandma comes down the driveway. If you have seen this video.
I have, yes.
Yeah, if you watched it, okay. Oh. Is that Grandma comes down the driveway and says, and he says, "Ma'am, I need you to get back." She said, "Oh, I ain't scared of her. Melissa, put that stuff down."
And, she didn't say stuff.
Yeah. She's riding one of those electric scooters, you know. Mm-hmm. And and so from the moment Grandma shows up on the scene, things start going sideways. And he fires the taser at her, and the taser is ineffective.
Because she's crazy and off her meds. Yeah.
Yeah. And he goes charging at Officer Williams with the pickaxe, at which point the other officer, Brandon Lopez, opens fire, shoots her twice, and she is reported to be in critical but stable condition. I haven't seen an update on her condition, but she apparently has not died yet. But as I said, nobody rioted in Nashville. CNN didn't go 24/7 on the story. There were no hashtag justice for Melissa on Twitter. No crazy lives matter marches. Cops can shoot white people every day and nobody cares.
Particularly a cop named Lopez.
Yeah. And you
especially
know,
especially a crazy woman wielding a pickaxe for some
and
reason.
So the moral of the story, as always, is crazy people are dangerous.
You're so right.
Anyways, I hear the boogie woogie piano music in the background, which tells me that we're approaching the end of the program. So remember, next Saturday night, 7 o'clock, same place here on Podbeam. With the other podcast. John?
Yeah, we're out of here. Thanks for stopping by, Diana.
And we'll see ya.
Night.